The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. In 1620, the Pilgrim Fathers and the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth to explore the New World. More than 400 years later, Darren from Plymouth explores today's New World. Darren from Plymouth is D.D. Denslow, and he's digging deeper on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. You've just been listening to the riveting Rick Mon, and I listened to some of the show, especially Natalie and Rick's comments on Elon Musk. And I just wanted to say, no, I'm not going to comment on what they're saying. I agree. Kanye shouldn't have been taken off, even if it is for his own, probably his own good. And, you know, he's a bit of a prat. And so is Alex Jones, you know, it looks like they were going out asking for it. But anyway, that's one person who's had their freedom of speech taken away of any note. Didn't mention all the people that have been given their freedom of speech back. Didn't mention about the child pornography that's been removed from Twitter and all the accounts that push it. Didn't mention that the COVID misinformation policy has been scrapped on Twitter. Didn't mention that the Hunter Biden laptop and all the information behind the decisions, etc., for that story to be removed, which affected the election. Didn't mention that that's also now about to be released on Twitter. Didn't mention that all the information, the rules, decision-making, conversations, emails, etc., etc., about election interference is also about to be released on Twitter. Of course, the people that believe Elon is a bad man will say, that's all a trap. He's just suckering you in. He wants to stick microchips in your head. I think we need to have a look and have a bit of perspective. I just say on Twitter, I'm not happy about the microchip thing. I don't dispute that. He's never said he's going to stick him in everyone's head. He's never actually said that. That's just an assumption. They're not looking at all the good things that are happening on Twitter. And if I was in charge of Twitter, I might not have removed Alex Jones, or I might have given Alex Jones his account back. I might not have removed Kanye West, but I would have done everything else that he has done. Yeah, apart from he hasn't given Darren of Plymouth's Twitter account back yet. So Elon, if you're listening, I'm bigging you up here, mate. Give me my account back, please. So again, we've been operating in a very small time frame with regards to Twitter and Elon Musk's purchase. We need to give it more time to see how it rolls out. I remain on the fence, and the £100 bet I've got on with the wonderful Rick Mon still stands. So there's that. And another thing, someone mentioned yesterday in the live chat that I'm a bit like Marmite, which is great. I like that because I am a bit like Marmite, and I admit that. I know that. I've heard this many, many times. So here is another Darren Marmite moment, because I got an email last night. I was just getting ready for bed, and I checked my emails. I've got other hosts that I look after. I want to make sure their shows are going all right. And I got an email. I'm just going to read it out. All right, Denslow. Not a good start using my surname like that. Level Earth is a great subject. Although you didn't make yourself look so great today. This is yesterday's conversation. Teaming up with a lady, a maths teacher, mocking flat earthers and asking questions. Sorry for asking questions. Taking the piss when no flat earther can answer back. Using your platform that way leaves a bad taste in one's mouth. And it's a form of trolling. You know how the government psyops work, and Flat Earth has the massive controlled opposition misinformation clans all over the gaff. Globers posing as Flat Earthers, being nasty and misinforming and twisting things. Well, you are no different from a shill or controlled opposition. Well, I'm not sure. I wouldn't have thought it at first, but you have opened up questions. Sitting there in a double act asking those pathetic questions, I asked what Flat Earth is. That's what I asked. What is it? Nobody to answer. Any normal person that isn't a hypocrite, research it. I have. If you want your dumbass questions answered, you'd research and listen to people in the know like Eric Dubé, who I've reached out to. Then go from there, forming your own opinion. We all know not to just listen to the government or anyone without questions and research. I'm guessing you're a bit of a fraud. Prove us wrong. Did you know that you must not trust the government? You say the moon landing was definitely faked. No, I said the footage was faked, but fail to understand why. I'm pretty sure if we didn't go to the moon, it wasn't because the earth is flat. Get the bay on if you've got any guts. Well, I have, and that was Love Johnny. Okay, so if Johnny is out there, or if you're in the live chat, and yeah, I watch the live chat, I've got my eyes on someone. Thanks for your lovely message, mate. It's great that you're listening to the show and that you're a fan. And I'm pretty sure before my guest a maths teacher mentioned flat earth, because she brought it up. I actually sort of said, I think we should stay away from this. But do you know why we should stay away from it, Sarah? Because I get trolled mercilessly. People send me emails like that. And voila, 7 p.m. last night or whenever it was I checked my emails, I got that email. Okay, we have differences of opinions. But to be ad hominem and not provide me with any evidence to support what you believe is a little bit off. But anyway, thanks for the email. I hope you're listening today, Johnny. And Johnny, you've got that email address. You know how to contact me. I'd love you to come on the show and explain to me the questions that I asked yesterday. And one of them being, what is the flat earth? Because no one yet, and I've done my research, has been able to explain to me. Okay, so please keep your messages coming in the live chat. Buy some merch. You can get on the radio, on the website, on tntradio.live. If you have any suggestions for a possible guest, I've just had one, Johnny, or host that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio, or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Looping you in on the latest.
Alert straight to my phone.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. You're on Digging Deeper, and I never even got a chance to introduce my guest today. And of course, it is my old mucker, Rohan. He's back. He had a break from me last week. He was on Rick. I actually listened to your conversation with Rick last week. Very, very good. I was getting my ears bled by Natalie because I'm still sitting on the fence with Elon and can't make my mind up. And maybe we'll do that swap again. Rohan, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here. It's great to be there with Rick last week, though. Get a little bit of a fresh take on something.
Yeah, good. It was a good chat, and I'm sure it was well received by everybody that was listening at the time. So we always sort of do a little bit of prep for our conversations about what we're going to talk about, and I thought maybe last week you may have got brought up with some of your views on China and a bit more of the detail and sort of the underbelly and mechanics of what's going on and why we're seeing a lot of this imagery and why our mainstream media are talking about China at the moment. It's been the dominant story on social media, on the BBC and MSM for the last week. And that's the protests that we've been seeing. Actually, we've seen yesterday that there was a quarantine camp that was on fire in Lanzhou. I think I pronounced that right. And this is apparently the public in China's response to the zero COVID policy. So just a general opinion before I sort of delve a little bit into just zero COVID, Rohan, on what your first impressions are on these stories coming out of China.
Well, I think it's definitely very interesting to see the Chinese people reach this level of breaking point, like what happened with the Hong Kong protests, because people in China bear real consequences to their actions. You know, it's easy to sit in the West and be all like, oh, you have a right to protest, but you don't get arrested and thrown in the gulag and probably killed for protesting against the government like you do in China. So it's to see people come out in mass for anything is always a spectacular event. This really is the biggest outpouring of public support for an issue that's against the government since Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, and can it actually be compared to Tiananmen Square? It's being called, oh, this is the biggest uprising since Tiananmen Square. And obviously we had those images of the person trying to stop a tank, which I understand actually may have been taken out of context and was used by the West as pure propaganda. Again, that's a completely separate issue. I'd have to look into that a bit deeper. You think there's a rightful comparison between the protests in China today and those that happened in, what was it, 88 or something in China?
Yeah, I think it was 88 or it was 86. But I think it's fair to compare the two because because it's raw amount of people, right? Like Tiananmen Square happened in one place, but if you look at a lot of these protests, it's like they're not isolated. They're going on in Shanghai, but they're also going on in the Zhengzhou province and like a few other provinces. It's spreading, and it's got support on they have to constantly suppress the posts on their own WeChat about it because people are talking. like it's the communication of the people is the thing that they're always trying to suppress, and they really seem to not be able to stop it this time. And I think also it's kind of deflecting it to be about the zero COVID policy is the mistake here, because the zero COVID policy is simply the breaking point. Like, really, people are tired of Xi's leadership. They're tired. They believe that even if they don't believe that the CCP is at fault, they believe that the current direction that the country is moving in is not beneficial. I mean, a lot of the CCP has got away with before, with this bigging up the country, you know, being like, oh, we're ending poverty, we're making China strong, and the people bought that. They believed that their country was like fastly accelerating up the ladder under this leadership. But now there is this sense that under Xi it's stagnating, and that he's just going to become another Mao, and there are many people that, despite being, you know, the communist China, they in secret, they don't like Mao so much. They prefer the more sort of open leadership of people like the person who recently died, the Jiang Zemin. Like, they prefer that more sort of open to the West in terms of commerce, but still sort of nationalistic at home.
Yeah, as we go back to the zero COVID bit as the breaking point, you know, what does zero COVID actually mean? Because it's a statement that's been bandied around for the last 2 years. We've seen it in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and in China. They've all tried to go for this zero COVID policy. They wanted to completely delete a virus or cancel a virus from their society. And zero COVID, also known as COVID zero, is a find, test, trace, isolate, and support system. It's a public health policy implemented by some countries during the last COVID pandemic, with a strategy that involves, I've just mentioned, contact tracing, mass testing, border quarantine, lockdowns, and mitigation software in order to stop community transmission. They have a suppression phase, and then they have a containment phase. Why is China, when the rest of the world has opened up, are they still pursuing this policy? I mentioned a story the other day, about 2 days ago, I think. I can't remember if it's Wednesday or Tuesday, about how the Chinese were putting digital like masks on the face of all the crowds and the footballers who were playing football at the Qatar World Cup, because they didn't want the public in China, or the mainstream public in China, to see that the rest of the world had finally dropped their masks. Not everyone. There's still some loonies out there. Some great pictures on my Twitter feed at the moment. There's some really great new masks that you can get out there. But why are China still pursuing this zero COVID policy, especially if they claimed they've only had one death in the last 6 months?
It's good to mention the World Cup there, because that really was a big flood breaker. Like, the cat definitely got let out of the bag there, because it took them many days before they censored the crowd or censored the players. And the discussions going on WeChat were like, yeah, as you said, why is the rest of the world opening up? Why are we still under these restrictions? Because, to put it simply, it's being wielded as a bludgeon of political power, like it was in all the Western countries. Mm-hmm. You know, Xi is using the zero COVID to punish cities that, you know, that go against him, and why he's decided to focus particularly on Shanghai is that there's been this long-term rivalry within the CCP, between a kind of the faction of the kind of more rich elite sort of kids from Shanghai that want China to be communist but open, and then the more sort of grassroots country communists like Xi and like Mao and like, you know, Stalin before him. If you look at what happened when Stalin took over and sort of people like Trotsky were exiled, it's like it's a kind of a similar event going on in China right now, where Xi is consolidating one side of the party by destroying the other. And the people of Shanghai, they've just completely had enough, in all the other areas that Xi is trying to oppress with these measures. And it also reeks of the typical communist propagandistic arrogance, where you have zero policies, right? Where it's like, we're going to reduce poverty to zero. We're going to reduce COVID to zero. It's like, you know, we're going to fight this war on an unwinnable foe, but we will win it because we're the CCP. You know, we can take this virus and we can, you know, fight it and stop it completely. And yeah, anybody with any ounce of sense knows that that's a pipe dream, no matter what authoritarian measures that you put in, even if you weld people's doors shut.
You're suggesting then it's the megalomania that exists in the CCP, which of course would have grown always. It would have continually grown that aspect of all powerfulness, because there's only ever been a one party state. It's what the CCP are always in power. There are no challengers to their dominance, and if there are any challengers to their dominance, then they enact a zero COVID policy and lock you in your bloody in your flats and in your buildings, and they weld you in. Now, this morning or late last night, China announced that they were relaxing some of their lockdown rules and restrictions. And there is, you mentioned Jiangsu, giant Chinese cities, was Jiangsu and Chongqing announced an easing of COVID curbs on Wednesday after biggest acts of public defiance in a decade. So we are about to go to an ad break. So I'm going to go to the ad break now, Rohan, and we'll pick up on the fact that there seems to have been a relaxation of the rules overnight. Could this be from public pressure? Could it be international pressure from the West and the Western media, who I also would like to talk about because of their very keen interest in freedom and democracy in China? But, you know, that was missing for the last 2 years. So we're going to be discussing those things when we come back after this quick ad break on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Hescher is talking about.
This is ground zero. If we can't win in Arizona, what expectation do we have that we're going to win anywhere else? So Warriors in Arizona are standing up against the corrupted 2022 election results in the state. The current results are impossible, and Americans know it. There is no way that the 2022 election results in Maricopa County should be certified. Certification should be based on results that were obtained through well-controlled election processes collated within certified and working machines by non-biased election workers. That's not too much to ask for, is it? I mean, both sides should want that, I would think. There simply are too many corrupted activities recorded to date in this election in Maricopa County to legitimately certify the current results for Arizona. These results are completely uncertifiable. Starting on Friday, a group of patriots made the decision to go to the Arizona Capitol to protest this 2022 stolen election. The crowd was sparse because many were told to stay away from the Capitol by GOP leaders, who evidently were concerned about another January 6th set up by the corrupt, tyrannical government. Very, very disturbing what's gone on in those largest counties in the battleground states.
Hescher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Far-left Brazilian Supreme Court orders banks to block funds of businessmen who supported the protesters in mass democracy rallies. Sounds like Canada, doesn't it?
The federal government has invoked the Emergencies Act.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT. Keep the messages coming, the positive and the negative, but be nice, okay? We all have a difference of opinion, Johnny. We was just talking about China. How they have relaxed some of their restrictions in some of their large cities. I know very little about Guangzhou or Chongqing. In fact, you know, they're cities that I've only really just heard of in the last 24 hours. Why do you think Xi and the CCP have now decided, after they were just locking everybody up and sending pictures around the world of them, welding them into their flat apartments and blocks, tower blocks, are they relaxing the rules?
I think this is a rare victory for the people in China. I don't think international pressure has ever meant anything to China, really. They always just do whatever agenda they want and be damned the consequences. But Xi understands that he pushed it too far, and he can't handle an internal rebellion. There's too many, you know, important geopolitical events going on right now with Ukraine, with potentially, you know, eyeing up Taiwan. And he can't handle a civilian revolt right now. So he needs to quell it. He needs to let up the COVID policy. And at this point, a lot of his sort of authoritarian crackdowns have had their intended effect. Like I said, the Shanghai group has to a large extent been crushed. Like that their will is broken. You know, like sometimes when you have to crush your enemy to the point where they're now subservient. You know, like he's done that. So if he needs to roll back and give the people that little illusion of peace back, illusion of choice. You know, because if he doesn't post a win for China, his leadership is in serious jeopardy right now.
Even though he's just been selected for another term. In fact, isn't he now president for life?
Yeah, he did what Mao did, where he got the third term and then declared himself the president for life, which again is the heart of a lot of this, because it is the weird thing with a lot of the Chinese public is that a lot of them are completely fine with the communist structure of the government, but they still want the leadership to change. And like you said, even though it's a one-party system, the fact that there was that friction between the Shanghai Club and the sort of more mainstream mainlander sort of farmer commies, like, actually did give some degree of balance to the government, to the point where the people could at least believe that their interests were being served, at least at a small amount. But all of those illusions have been completely destroyed at this point. And somebody needs to come in and reestablish that trust in the government. And people are calling to get rid of Xi. A lot of the sort of popular chants during the riots are to remove Xi, not necessarily to destroy the government, because they've just believed that Xi's time has passed. And because of the way that China works as kind of culturally, they still have that sort of mandate from heaven kind of view on their leaders. And they kind of believe that his star has passed, right? You know, it's like the fates have now moved on and will shine on some other person that they need to get behind.
But is there another person? I mean, who's waiting in the wings within the Chinese Communist Party to take his place? You know, who is his nearest internal rival? Do you know?
Well, that's something I don't know, and I'd be very interested to know, because a lot of the Shanghai group, they sort of withered and got old without really naming any big successors that I know of. So if there is some person, you know, who's the heir to sort of Jiang Zemin waiting in the wings, that now is the time for him to come forward, because that's how the CCP will save itself.
Yeah, and we'll mention Jiang Zemin, because he died in the last week, in the next segment. So what now then? So, I mean, if I was a Chinese protester, yeah, and I've gone out, I've burnt down I've burnt down a camp, quarantine camp in Lanzhou, apparently, if you can believe the imagery that's coming out of China, I would think, hey, that's a victory. Looks like this whole protesting lark seems to work. Do you think that the public are going to come out and continue to protest on other issues? I mean, COVID was just the final straw that broke the camel's back. But actually, the real underlying reasons a lot of these protests have appeared in China across the country is to do with labor laws, pay, workers' rights, etc. So do you think these issues are now going to be pushed hard in mainland China and in the major cities in China by the public?
Yeah, I do think there's gonna have to be a huge crackdown on the public, and he's going to have to find some excuse to do it other than COVID. Because, yeah, as you said, a lot of these problems, I've been saying for a while now that China may collapse under its own weight before it becomes a big threat to the rest of the world. Because it's just like what happened with the USSR, how there was all this, the great threat of the Cold War and nuclear destruction, and then it just kind of broke. You know, like it just fizzled out and everything split apart. And it seems to be the very similar energy that's going on in China right now, where it's on the one hand, Xi has declared himself, you know, the ruler for life. He's got all of this like machine power behind him from the government. The people have just had enough. Like the Evergrande scandal happened, and they've got all the banks are still failing. They're still having to like put tanks outside of some banks to stop people from doing runs and getting all their money out. COVID is just the straw that broke the camel's back in a long line of grievances that the people have with the government. And the lie of the zero poverty policy, like people believe that China got rid of poverty when all they did was change the definition of poverty to the point where it's impossible for anyone to be in poverty. You need to have literally no money. So it's the emperor's new clothes type thing where the clothes have come off. And now the problem is you can't put them back on. As I said, the cat's been let out the bag. The people have seen that this succeeds. They've seen it can work. And yeah, a lot of them, the more sort of dark side of it is they're ready to go out and die for this cause. They are ready for the fight, like the people in Hong Kong were.
Yeah, and you know, the ones that were calling out Z by name publicly, hey, they're all socially credited up. They got QR codes. They're being watched by a million different cameras from a million different angles. I'm sure there's an office somewhere with a load of big screens with all these people's faces on, where they are being our AI is identifying them. Lists are being compiled, and it could well be that I don't want to say snatch squads, but these people may be arrested, or worse still, worse than being arrested, having your QR code gone red. Yeah, so that's what they might do. They might just make all these people red and lock them down by stealth without having to weld them into their homes, something that they've already been employing to reduce the size of these protests by stopping people from congregating together. Just make their QR code go red. So when we come back, we're just going to a quick news headline break. It's very quick, Rohan. And we will have a look at how the media in the West have portrayed these protests compared to what the protests in the West during the last 2 years were portrayed. And then we'll continue looking at, you know, the public dissent of Z and what this might mean potentially for Taiwan and Hong Kong in the future. So please stay with us. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news. Go.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. China has blasted the BBC, accusing the British broadcaster of making up lies to tarnish Beijing's image in the West as it clamps down on COVID protests. Ukraine has again been accused of shelling civilians in the centre of the Donetsk city in the country's east, and France has admitted it has run out of weapons to send to Ukraine as the endless flow of arms depletes Western stockpiles.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. I'm here with Rohan, psychology researcher, gamer, geek, a bit of a historian, and, you know, somebody who looks into China. So we've seen these protests. They have been everywhere. I worry about when something is everywhere, it's part of the agenda or part of some other narrative that they're trying to psyop onto people. And as someone who initially got caught out with the Chinese videos, as somebody who perpetuated Chinese videos at the very, very beginning of the COVID, I'm using inverted commas here, you can't see me, in 2019 in December, I was one of the first people to latch onto it on Twitter. So I feel a little bit of shame and guilt for that. And so I'm very, very, very cautious on Chinese videos. But our media, just like at the beginning of COVID, have also latched onto these videos. Apart from their narrative is very anti-CCP and pro-democracy. More inverted commas coming up here. Very pro-democracy when they weren't when we did it. Why are our mainstream media attacking the CCP or supporting these Chinese protests, these freedom-loving people in China, when it actually doesn't fit their own narrative from the past?
Well, we still have to play into this lie that the China is the big evil bad commie, right? And we're the good guys. That's the thing with the media. It's like we're the people who have free speech. We're the people who have right to protest and other stuff. We're the light of the world in terms of all these rights. But yeah, the simple reality is because of the lockdown and recent events, like, we're just giant hypocrites. Like, we lost the right to criticize them on a lot of this. Like, I would love to be able to be in a country that didn't do all of these same things and was silent on all of our protests, but that's the truth. It's like every Western nation, we had massive protests, we had a lot of similar things going on, and it was silenced by the media. Like, people were arrested. You know, look at what happened in Canada with the truckers being, you know, sort of prosecuted, having their bank accounts sort of frozen and stuff. And
not just the truckers, but the people who supported the truckers had their bank accounts and their funds messed with by the platforms that were being used to donate to them. So it was far. So I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just wanted to add that in to the actual, you know, the Chinese level of authoritarianism and their disciplinary, their punitive responses to dissent was very. It was exactly the same in Canada as it was in China, or would be in China.
Yeah, it's like, as much as I do obviously condemn what China is doing, it's like, well, everyone in the West has been doing this too. Like, we've become like China in terms of like squelching dissent and silencing protest and just media blackouts on so many things. Even before COVID, like the Gilets Jaunes protests in France, it's like every time there is a protest or some big action that's against the narrative, they have to silence it. But I do believe that a lot of the protests and all this, the stuff coming out of China, is real. It is a grassroots thing. It's not some sort of propaganda, because it doesn't make China look good. It definitely doesn't serve their interests. And it doesn't serve the interest of the global cabal as a whole, because it's drawing that attention to the hypocrisy. I find it incredible that they are calling China out on this, because it's kind of a Streisand effect thing, right? Because everyone's saying, oh, hang on, what about the truckers here? What about, you know, the protesters in Italy? Yeah, in France, in Germany, like most
people in
Europe.
What's going on in Holland right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people in Europe don't realize that every country in Europe has had large-scale riots from pretty much 6 months into the lockdown till now. Like, they're all there, they're all still going, you know, even places there like Germany and stuff. And people think that, like, oh, you know, the protests are only happening in places like China where it's really bad. Or maybe they know about Canada. But, oh, it's fine where I am, you know, it's fine here kind of mentality. And they don't realize that the war is kind of at our gates in this one. Like, that it's right here. And it's the same with what's going on with the Qatar World Cup. It's like you kind of lose your right to criticize the humanitarian abuses of someone else when you've been doing that for 2 years. And I think that people should be calling out their own governments.
And COP 27 and COP 26, both of those events are similar in that, you know, it's the hypocrisy on show, just as with the media with China right now, is galling. It's quite unbelievable. And these protests, or the protest stories, comes literally, they sort of started filtering into the mainstream media in the West just days after everyone's favorite psychopathic German Nazi sounding world super baddie Klaus Schwab. Oh, I did give him a right introduction then, didn't I? he's probably quite proud of that title I just gave him. Called China the model for the West. So it's sort of, wait a sec, is he really in charge? Is Klaus Schwab really in charge? If he goes down and sits on Chinese TV and goes, China's a model for the West, just for days later, even though there were protests going on at the time, just for days later, our mainstream media to be pushing these Chinese stories everywhere. Is it really a glitch in the matrix, a fracture in the narrative, Rohan?
Yeah, well, it's the nature of doublespeak and a lot of these sort of ways that they're subverting power. Because, yeah, the reality is they have turned the West into more like China in many ways. It's like the creep has already happened, but they can't let the general public know that. You know, they said it's all about that, keeping up the appearance that we're the good guys, we're the light of the world that believe in human rights, and they don't. And everybody's kind of got to that point where they see through that now. Again, it's another Emperor's New Clothes situation where people understand that a lot of the rights we used to have are gone. We don't all of these sort of the free speech right to protest, a lot of these things are an illusion. You know, like with what happened with Twitter and the censorship of things, with the media and the censorship of things, we live effectively in a communist Chinese system. You know, we're already in the process of adopting social credit scores, potentially like central bank digital currencies. Uh-huh. Like, you know, with countries are building gulags, like Australia building all of their quarantine sort of like camps. You know, it's we are already halfway through being turned into China. And I think people now need to wake up and not lose that last half that we still have left, because we still have the right to protest here and not get killed or thrown in a gulag. And that could be ending very soon.
Yeah, I mean, I was just reading it and I only read a headline, so I haven't delved into the story, but I was seeing that Rishi Sunak was commenting on the Just Stop Oil protesters and these climate loons who... my phone's ringing. These climate loons who are, blocking roads and cutting up, they're planning to cut up, you know, historical pieces of art, et cetera, et cetera. And that he's calling these protests illegal and that we need to clamp down on these protests. We've seen this rhetoric throughout the last 2 years with our own freedom marches. Do you think then that the UK is heading in that direction where they're going to take an authoritarian and dismissive approach to public protests and dissent?
Yeah, that's why I do worry about the sort of more psyopsy type organizations like the Just Stop Oil that insulate Britain, like Antifa and BLM and stuff, because as I see it, their purpose is to be the provocateurs that take things too far to justify the crackdown laws, right? So it's like they allow those people, you know, like Kristallnacht style to run rampant and cause as much damage as possible. And then the people that, you know, do anything in reprisal to that, you know, or the people, but when there's a call to crack down on that behavior, they put blanket laws in that will then restrict everyone's right to do stuff. And they'll be able to have the argument of like, oh, well, the public was asking for it. You know, we made this situation horrible so the public would give us the power to fix it, but also the power to stamp out everything else. It's that, you know, I hate it when they do this kind of worming in, they worm legitimacy in through a lie. Because, yeah, like a lot of these protesters, the Just Stop Oil people, they should be stopped. But it's kind of convenient that they're protesting in the most destructive and like objectively wrong way possible, right? Everybody is going to object to their methods. They're blocking roads. They're destroying art. Like, it doesn't matter. Even if you agree with their underlying message, their methods are clearly designed to cause as much offense as possible so that people ask for restrictions.
And there are actually already laws in place to be dealing with that don't prevent people from congregating together and protesting and offering their dissent to policies and governments. And this gives me a nice little sort of segue to get a question that was asked in the group chat, which I did check, about financial influence and investment into the UK by China, but not just the UK. We could actually put that across the world. We can see, you know, we've seen, who was it, John Cena, who did that Chinese speech during the pandemic because he had offended the CCP some way. Obviously, he's been financially influenced. But if we bring it back to the UK, do you think that some policy decisions over the last few years have been a direct result of lobbying, political influence, or actual just downright bribery and financial influence and business opportunities put into this country by China?
Without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. And weirdly enough, it's the same method that we used before with our empire, right? Because it's the financial domination method of sort of power acquisition. You know, it's like they pump in this huge amount of investment into infrastructure, and then they've got that back door, that spy line. I mean, this is why a lot of government infrastructure, a lot of these things should be considered a national security issue. Because it's like, it's all well and good in times of peace if China invests in all of your nuclear power plants, but what happens when their motives become more suspect and, you know, you realize that all of your country's energy infrastructure is controlled by a potentially aggressive rival nation? it's definitely dangerous, and they have bought huge amounts of influence in even sort of countries like, because everybody will think of like Africa and places where they've effectively bought the country's leadership, but they have their own police stations, they have their own sort of internal yep. systems in UK, you know, in America, in all these places. So we have let the wolf amongst the sheep in that regard. We've let China get their fingers in many pies. And now we should maybe sort of think about getting them back out again, you know, sort of making sure that there's more security added to these systems.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we'll be able to get them back out again, as you said, because, I mean, when I think about China and their investment or involvement in this country, I think security, I think surveillance, I think digital cameras, data, TikTok. Yeah, and TikTok. I'll say that twice. That's what I think. And actually, to try and reverse whatever process or system or procedure they've got placed in our country to obtain the data and information from the surveillance security systems that are in place in the UK and TikTok. You know, every time you use TikTok, they're watching and recording everything you're doing. You know, I find it quite worrying as why they would want that information. And we can guess on that, you know, why they want information on the UK populace. But what can they do with that data? And my concern is the whole of the last couple of years has been influenced and manipulated by data that China have on the Western world and their ability to sort of infect and coerce our information systems, our mainstream media and our social media. And they've helped generate this last nearly 3 years now of chaos. Final comments on that before we go to a break, Rowan.
Yeah, I think it's like the TV show Westworld, where if you have enough data on people, you can effectively create an artificial person that will respond exactly as they do. And that's what China's doing with the data. They're running sort of very detailed predictions on the decline of the West. They're watching everything burn.
Yeah, and I would quick statement, the Chinese military I've just taken this from an article. The Chinese military will wage large-scale information warfare in a future conflict using cyber, electronic, and conventional attacks to achieve information dominance, according to new details of Beijing's growing military capabilities. So the Third World War, we're probably already in it. We have been for some time. It's TikTok. That's the early barrage we've got from the dragon from the east. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be looking at dictators in general. Obviously, China have got one in Xi. According to everyone, thinks Putin is a dictator, and there are other dictators dotted around the world. They're all bad at the moment. I don't think we've got any good ones. You can have good dictators. So if you want to find out more about that, come right back on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
More evidence that the Department of Justice under President Biden is little more than a political arm of the left. You might remember the case of Uruj Rahman, a lawyer who, along with another attorney, threw a Molotov cocktail into an NYPD cruiser during the 2020 George Floyd riots in New York City. The Trump administration wanted to use a domestic terrorism sentencing enhancement against them, which would have carried a maximum 10-year sentence. But according to the Washington Free Beacon, the Biden Justice Department dropped that, and the pair pleaded guilty to lesser charges. Rahman still faced up to 5 years in prison, but got just 15 months after the Biden Justice Department intervened on her behalf. The judge actually called Rahman a remarkable person who did a terrible thing one night, repeating the argument of her defense team. Prosecutors said both attorneys explicitly approved of violence and in text messages encouraged others to engage in violence. And the Biden DOJ went to bat for these low-life punks, shouted from the rooftops. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Everybody's terrified of cancer, the big C. They don't want to talk about embarrassing things, so blood in their bowel motions, going more frequently, a persistent cough, losing weight. I remember a wee man who didn't come to my surgery for ages, and all he would do was apologise and say, "Oh, sorry, doctor, I know if I had come, I know you'd have got me sorted." We are not too busy. We are very, very keen to see our patients as soon as we possibly can. So please don't get scared. Get checked.
You're listening to Digging Deeper with D.D. Denslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A lot of positive comments on the conversation that we're having, Rohan. And Johnny, apology accepted, mate. We'll level the playing field. Excuse the pun. Okay. Yeah, so go back to China. So Xi, would you call him a malevolent dictator or a benevolent dictator?
Oh, he's definitely on the malevolent side. I think that, yeah, he wants power at the cost of anything, right? It's his power that matters. Everybody else be damned and thrown under the bus.
And the power of the party. That's all that matters. His power, then the power of the party, then the people. But they always come last when it's a proper, or what we would call a tyrannical dictator, or better, a malevolent dictator. Now, I don't really want to talk about malevolent dictators. This is always quite a depressing way to end this conversation. But actually, there are historical precedents of people who have been called benevolent dictators, the good king, as you might describe it, Rohan. So maybe you want to give a description to the listeners what is meant by a benevolent dictator as opposed to a malevolent dictator, and maybe, you know, provide some examples.
Well, this is all about the proof is in the pudding. It's about how they serve the people and how they're viewed with the history books a lot of the time. I mean, we can never, the very word itself, dictator, is something that's kind of developed a negative connotation over the years. But, you know, in the sort of traditional Roman, it just literally means the person that gives the dictates. It's this assumption that the authority is always evil, I think, is a dangerous thing. And someone who wields absolute authority must be evil. But you know, there's the distinction between the dictator and the tyrant. That's the thing. The tyrant is the someone who does, they do evil with the power. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you take the example that always comes to people's mind when they think of the ancient figures is someone like Caesar, who got taken out by the elites because he served the people too well, right? He introduced laws and sort of diktats that aimed to benefit the standard Roman citizen. And then, you know, like one of the great examples in regards to Rome, like my personal favorites, is old Marcus Aurelius, you know, the great sort of Stoic philosopher, you know, a person who ruled Rome, but also wrote books about, yeah, philosophy and the idea of justice and what's right. And, you know, a lot of these rulers are viewed as sort of great golden ages of peace and justice within their respective realms. You know, the idea that someone who wields absolute authority to govern their nation is sort of default bad is definitely not true based on history.
We've been so conditioned, especially in the West, not so much in the East and in Eastern Europe and Russia, etc., but in the West, we've been so conditioned to believe that we have created the perfect governing system. Democracy is the best option that we've got. And actually, we never really hear about some of the modern benevolent dictators. In fact, you know, and there may be some people listening today who have for the first time heard the phrase benevolent dictatorship, which is an authoritarian government that exercises absolute political power over the state, but is perceived to do so with regard for the benefit of the population as a whole. And, you know, I'm a daydreamer. Yeah, and I'm going on a tangent here, Rohan. But I'm a daydreamer. You know, I sit there and I have little fantasies that go on in my head. And one of them is the old free wish fantasy. What would I have if I had free wishes? And I've thought about this particular subject in depth. And one of them would be that, you know, normally it would be I get given some sort of godlike power where I can do whatever I like. And I would install myself as world leader, have absolute power, but I would benefit all the people. I wouldn't be some bad, murderous, Hitler-like despot. And I use the term Hitler-like because we all know what that means. But there have actually been modern times, and some of these names are quite surprising. I'm going to bring up one that you mentioned because I always understood him to be a bad guy, and that's Josip Broz Tito of the old Yugoslavian.
Old Yugoslavian.
Yeah, Can you tell me anything about him? I'm testing your knowledge.
Well, I have sort of like some Serbian and Croatian friends, and you know, obviously there are plenty of bad things that Tito did. I mean, this thing, when even if you're looking for benevolent dictators, none of them don't have stains. But Tito's always that example that everyone gives if you want to name one communist leader who wasn't bad, right? Because at the end of the day, Tito was authoritarian, did abuse his power against his enemies, definitely. But he split off from Stalin. He did have his own sort of brand of communism that was definitely more orientated around the people. And just, it's not really my opinion, it's the opinion of a lot of Serbians and Croats and stuff. Like, he's still very well loved. Like, people will still say, like, oh, you know, give me back Tito, you know, the good old days with Tito when Yugoslavia was strong and whole, you know, and they get all that nostalgia glowy-eyed over him. And, and yeah, like, honestly, like, if you look at a lot of his record, he doesn't seem that great from an outsider point of view. But just hearing the how he's still held in high regard in sort of all of Yugoslavia is or former Yugoslavia, I should say. It's.
I mean, look what happened to Yugoslavia when he wasn't in power. Yeah, I mean, it took a little time to get there. When did he die, Tito? I mean, he was there from sort of Second World War times, wasn't he?
Was it the 80s, 90s or something he stopped? Yeah, I think it was 80s. He stopped, and then 90s he died or something. But it's great charismatic leaders like him are the only people who can hold Yugoslavia together. Because, yeah, like, you look at all of the problems that the Balkans have in general.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, if someone is capable of binding them together, they're already doing a pretty good job, because you've got a lot of
without that unifying figure, and he is somebody who has been described as a benevolent dictator. Without him as that unifying presence, we saw what happened in the Balkans in the 90s, and obviously then the USA and Great Britain and NATO went in and offered some democracy. Yeah, good bit of democracy, really, really sorted them out. They are reasonably peaceful now, but that's probably because they're too busy rebuilding. And there's another guy that I came across yesterday called Franz Albert Rene. He was a benevolent dictator. He comes from the Seychelles, and he's quite an interesting guy. He created it. So Seychelles is an African country. It was one of the poorest countries in Africa, and he come along, universal healthcare system. He increased the literacy rate of the Seychelles to 90%, which is probably higher than the UK right now. He led his country to the point of being the most developed country in Africa, as measured by the Human Development Index. I haven't looked at that, so I can't comment. Helping build one of the continent's highest gross domestic products per capita. His supporters believed that he had solid social priorities. He gave extensive funding for education, healthcare, the environment. Oh my God, he might be a climate change guy. Infant mortality improved. Literacy rate, economic well-being was among the best in the continent. During his rule, he avoided a volatile political climate and underdevelopment such as in neighboring countries like the Comoros and Madagascar. And then you mentioned stains, then it came out in 2018. It looks like he might have murdered and tortured his way to such greatness as a benevolent dictator. In fact, there were people who were murdered, tortured, disappeared, assassinated, detained without trial, as well as evidence of financial crimes. So it just looks like it's almost impossible to be a perfect, nice, good king. Do you believe in the future that might be a solution to our problems? And let's go back to put the tinfoil hat on. Are we going to be presented with somebody who is a benevolent dictator, but actually will be it's Rick Munn, a false prophet, yeah? Or somebody who's going to, on appearance, look good, but lead us down a dark path? Final comments, Rohan.
I think that a lot of the problem we have is that the systems that we've developed, you know, democracy, all of this stuff the question isn't like who we have in power. It's like there are the levels of accountability and like, can we get rid of them? Because we've always been aiming to get a good king. The problem is if you get a bad king, you want to get rid of them quickly to see if you can then get a good king in again. And we've also taken a lot of power away from the executive. And I think this is the question we've really got to ask ourselves more going forward is, do we give some power back to the executive? You know, do we actually go more for a kind of a democratic king model. Because if you look at how America does it with the office of the president has a lot of executive power, but he still has to defer a lot to Congress. Like he only has powers to do, like, you know, the sort of direct executive actions that can still be stopped later on by the Supreme Court, by Congress. You know, do we embolden the executive body more? You know, because like a system like China, you know, it's like they've got all the power of the executive body, right? Like Xi can do whatever he wants. It's like, is there a middle ground where we have effectively more of a dictatorial leader, but they still have the democratic restraints? They still have the systems of accountability and the ways that we can get rid of them.
Okay, and finally, because I'll go back to where I was right at the beginning of the conversation, pre-email, on Elon Musk, one of his ideas, and he's banded it around, maybe that's why he wants the phone, maybe that's why he wants Twitter, is that he wants to democratize every major decision by using an app and getting the public to vote on it. So, you know, gun control, for example, first thing that popped in my head, in America, they could get the public to decide on an app. Would that be a very, very good worry? And we're about to quit. Would that be a good method of doing it if it was fair, democratizing decisions, Rohan?
Well, I think that's too much democracy, because there comes a point, if you have to wait for everyone to make decisions, you can never get stuff done. You know, the point of empowering the executive is that things get done quickly when they need to happen.
Right, okay. So, I mean, I quite like the idea if it's done fairly and we can all just decide, you know, and I'm sure decisions could be made much quicker that way. If it was just given to the public every Sunday, here's your decision, yes or no, bang. I like it personally. Whether it'll work, whether it'll be done fairly, who knows. Thanks for listening, Rohan. See you next week. Please stay on, right, come right back. It's Friday, so it's time for some germ warfare on TNT Radio.